Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Thursday morning. And as we do every Thursday morning, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in our friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, good morning. Hope you had a very Merry Christmas. Thanks for being with us.
Happy holidays, gents. How you doing this morning?
Doing awesome, man. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. So, Charles, we were talking about this earlier. So, Kansas City gets to 15-1. They wrap up the one seed in the AFC. Obviously, they're going for three in a row, which nobody's ever done before. I think the answer to this is just simply Chiefs fatigue, but I'll ask you. Heard a lot about, hey, man, look at Buffalo this year. Look at Baltimore. Look at how well those guys are playing. And Kansas City has struggled on offense for a lot of this year. But I kind of feel like the attitude towards them this season has been, yeah, ho-hum, look at the Chiefs. They win. That's just what they do. And they're 15-1 after winning back-to-back Super Bowls. It's pretty incredible. Just their run here that they're on right now, which could end up being the greatest three-year run in the history of the league.
Yeah, and then you watch them. You watch them just disassemble Pittsburgh, and you're sitting there and thinking to yourself, like, they're putting it. It's just ridiculous. You're like, they're putting it together. Like, you can see it happening. And Chris Jones isn't on the field. They're killing the Steelers, I think the Steelers do have some kind of fatal flaws built into that team. And I also think there's some stuff kind of going on inside the locker room there that, you know, has them a little bit sideways right now. But still, I mean, that was just, it was a terrible game to watch. It was absolutely commanding on the part of the Chiefs. Now they're starting to get Worthy. Xavier Worthy worked into that offense. Remember, Rashee Rice isn't even on the field for this team. He's the guy who comes back next year. It's just for them to kind of be tuning it up right now is really remarkable. But here's the one thing I will say about the Chiefs. They're playing, you know, they've played these close games, obviously, earlier in the year. The 15-1 records come by the, you know, skin of their teeth. They don't have a turnover in six games. I mean, that's wild. And if I were to sit here and say, okay, well, what's the thing that's going to happen in the playoffs that's going to undercut this? And it's a lot harder now because now you got the number one seed. You got the home games. You got the home field advantage through the AFC title game. You basically have set it up exactly the way you needed to set it up. And by the way, you secured that early, which means now you can rest guys. You're going to have the bye week. You also have, I mean, you effectively can have two bye weeks now and get guys rested. I would say the fact that they haven't had a turnover in six games to me, If you're like, why do they lose, you know, in their first playoff game or the AFC title game, I would say all of a sudden, you know, they have some turnovers. They're not playing perfect in terms of ball security, and that's something that comes back to bite them. But for Mahomes to play the best game he has, for Worthy to suddenly be blossoming in that offense, for the backfield to be that typical grind of, okay, Pacheco goes out, you know, but now you got P. Ryan, you have, you know, Kareem Hunt continue to play effectively. The defense is playing really well right now, played well without Chris Jones on the field. It's Chiefs fatigue, but they are who they are. They're 15-1. And I would say if you had drawn this up and said, this is where they're going to be after 16 games, it's about as perfect as you could consider going for a three-peat.
That said, Charles, I've been a Ravens believer all year and they've screwed some things up, but now they're in great shape now to win the division. I feel like we are headed toward a Ravens-Bills showdown for the right to see the Chiefs. I almost feel like, I mean, I don't know, to me, I just kind of dismiss the rest of the AFC, and maybe I shouldn't, but I feel like those teams are legit, and I also feel like either of them could go win in Kansas City. How do you view is the bigger picture of the AFC?
Yeah, I mean, I agree because you have, if you want to talk about the AFC and the realities of having to go through Arrowhead, they're both built to go through Arrowhead in terms of, look, Baltimore, they play cold weather games, right? It's not like it's a dome team. It's not like it's finesse. They both have the ability to run the football. They both have wild playmakers at quarterback. Buffalo and Baltimore both do. Look, right now for MVP, I mean, it's a dead heat between Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen. And a lot of that has to do with not only the statistics, not only the analytics of it, but then just things we have seen from them in terms of making plays. And, you know, you think of the Amari Cooper, remember the Amari Cooper lateral, right, to Josh Allen, and he runs in for a touchdown. You're like, oh, my God, that's just like it's a play that it just happens organically. And that's a real threat with Baltimore. Then you watch the Steelers game with Lamar Jackson and the touchdown where he runs around. I think it was like he held the ball for like 8 or 9 seconds and he throws a touchdown to Isaiah Likely in the end zone. He's done that. That's the third time this season he's done that. He did it in the opener. It didn't count because Likely's foot was on the line. But there's three times where he's literally run around at the end of a game and extended it to like 7, 8, 9 seconds and then thrown a touchdown to Likely in the end zone. And you just watch in that moment, you watch the Texans defenders. They look stupid. I mean, it's great. He has a defender within 5 yards of him for a good, like, 2-3 seconds. And the defender's like, I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how to get near this guy. And I'm too afraid to just attack and hope that it works out. The Bills and Ravens have dynamic quarterbacks. Literally, I think right now, both Jackson and Allen are playing, to me, the very best football of their career. I think they are at the top line of how they've ever played in their entire career. Lamar Jackson won MVP last year. Sit down and compare this season to last. It's a joke. He is so much better this season. He's so much better as a passer this season. He would probably have double-digit rushing touchdowns if he didn't have Derrick Henry on the team. To me, I'm with you. Like, those two, I would be stunned if they didn't end up duking it out to end up going to Arrowhead and play the Chiefs in the AFC title game. And I would say they're both threats. The one difference, I think, though, is I do think the Chiefs, especially if Chris Jones is healthy, are a superior defensive team. I do believe that. Now, the Chiefs do have flaws, though. Again, I think that the offensive line, obviously the tackles, you know, the position with the tackles, if Tooney's not playing left tackle, you know, let's wait and kind of see how that all sorts itself out health-wise down the stretch. But, you know, the Pacheco injury, you know, you're like, okay, well, if they really get into a situation, they got to run the football, can they do it effectively? But for Mahomes to play as well as he did against the Steelers, you just – if you're out there going, we can't see the Steelers when they're, or excuse me, you can't see the Chiefs when they're third straight, you have to be dismayed watching Mahomes in that game because you're like, this looks like a guy, especially, and then like Kelsey working his way into shape all season long. He reported like he was not in shape. And it took him, I think, effectively 2/3 of the season to really get himself to where he was up and running and in shape. And he looked last night, I mean, he looked yesterday like he was back at 100% again. That has to really give you, you know, nightmares if you're sitting there going, I don't want the Chiefs to win their third.
Yeah, no doubt. And then there's the NFC side of this where you get Detroit and Minnesota and Philadelphia kind of duking it out for that number one overall seed. And then Green Bay scored 30 points like 5 games in a row. You got Atlanta that's battled back into their division lead. The Rams are playing good football right now. Like the NFC playoffs, I think, have a chance to be awesome, Charles. How do you view that conference and where it stands right now?
Yeah, I mean, like, how brutal is the NFC North? Like, all three, like, Detroit, Minnesota, Green Bay, all clinched playoff spots already. All three have, like, if you're Detroit and the season's starting and they're like, hey, 15 games in, you're going to be 13-2. You're like, oh, we probably got the number one seed. Like, sweet, we're in a great spot. No, Minnesota's 13-2. Green Bay's 11-4, Philly's, you know, 12-3. You're going to literally fight through week 18 to try and win the number one seed in the NFC. The teams that have not clinched, their conferences, like it's the Rams in the NFC West and Atlanta in the NFC South or Tampa Bay, I mean, they're both 8-7, but Atlanta's got the inside track. You know, those are the afterthoughts. It's like, when I look at the NFC, I'm like, there's no doubt in my mind the NFC Championship game is coming out of the NFC East and the NFC North. Like, it's probably going to be Philly, and then it's one of these teams in the NFC North. Like, it could be Detroit. I still think the defensive injuries, the David Montgomery injury on top of that, it's just after a while, you're like, the attrition, as many points as you can score, you're going to probably have to score 40 points a game to get yourself into the NFC title game at this point. And the problem is every other team that I think in terms of being elite, Green Bay can score 40 with Detroit. Minnesota can score 40 with Detroit right now. I look at Minnesota and Green Bay defensively. I think they're healthier. I think they're better than Detroit right now because of that health aspect. The quarterback play and for both is been great. I don't. The Packers at some point are going to figure out that Jaden Reed's actually their best offensive player.
Yes.
At some point, and stop having him play on special teams and go, hey, let's play this guy 100% of our offensive snaps and see what he can do. It's just there's so much there, I think, for the Packers that still has not been unlocked. And Minnesota, I think, is actually kind of peaking right now. You know, Philly, the Hurts injury, okay, that throws a curveball into this. Like, it's a Saquon-dominated offense. We get that. But they don't – I don't know that they even get to the NFC title game if Hurts is beat up, you know, going into the playoffs without the number one seed. They really need that number one seed, and now they're definitely on the outside track.
So you mentioned Atlanta. Obviously, they're back in control, Charles, because of they swept the Bucs. And Michael Penix Jr. comes in and looks good. Looks, I mean, he has a pick, but it went off Kyle Pitts' hands. So, yeah, I mean, Pittsburgh. it's pretty clear, you know, that this is time to, I mean, first of all, I ripped the Falcons for drafting him, and now I guess it's a good thing they did. So he looks like it's going to be him, whether they make the playoffs or not. So Kirk Cousins, essentially, because he has a no-trade clause, he's going to get to choose where he goes next, right? I mean, is that the way to look at it?
Because absolutely,
whether they cut or not. Do you think it's more likely they cut or trade? If they do trade, you know, I assume they're not going to get much at all for him. I mean, how do you think it plays out with him? I mean, is it possible he could hang this up at this point?
Well, first off, they wouldn't get anything via trade. Doesn't matter anyway. It's no trade, and he's not waiving it. He's not. Here's how Cousins, I think, and his representation are approaching this. They're like, hey, you know what? You called Kirk when you're on the clock to draft Michael Penix, to tell him we're drafting Michael Penix. That's when Kirk Cousins finds out you're going to draft another quarterback. And you said that's a business decision. Well, you know what? We're going to go ahead and do the business decision now, which is to go, we're going to sit pat. And I think it's the fifth day of the new league year. If Kirk is on the roster past this point, you owe us $10 million guaranteed in 2026. So you're already on the hook for 90 for 14 starts. Do you want to add that extra $10 million in 2026 for a player that your offensive coordinator is completely out on and has been out for weeks and has wanted to make this change for weeks? Like, what are you going to do? No, they're going to cut him. Like, absolutely. There's no doubt in my mind. Kirk Cousins standing pat. He's going to go to free agency. And then I think he's going to survey things. I don't think Kirk's done. I've gotten no indication that Kirk's done at this point. Interestingly enough, I wonder, and I put this, I am wondering this, quote unquote, wondering this, kind of feeling like I sort of have an idea of it. I wonder if when you brought Kirk in, if maybe physically where he was, you were not like, okay, maybe the door here is open to taking Penix because maybe we're not 100% sold on Kirk being physically where we need him to be. Like, maybe the Penix, I almost wonder if part of that conversation that occurred leading into the draft was, yeah, we're still taking a little bit of a chance here on Kirk. Like, we've signed him in free agency. We've looked him over. Okay, we feel pretty good about it, but we're definitely not certain about how he's going to respond coming off of the torn Achilles, and if maybe that helped some elements in that front office get Penix drafted. They've been excited about Penix for weeks. When the decision was made, I reached out to people in the organization. They're like, dude, just wait. They're like, the biggest problem we have is going from a weak-armed righty to a strong-armed lefty. And getting our guys ready for that kind of a ball. But they were all predicting, like, just watch the verticality of the offense once Penix walks in. And I think you saw it right away. Like you said, Pitts was the one mistake, the interception that was not Penix's fault. And then I think there were even some drops in that game that you know, Penix could look even better. But what's going to happen with Kirk is he's going to sit there. They're going to have to release him, and then he's going to find out how does the rest of this picture sort out. Everyone's waiting to see what happens with Darnold. I truly believe that Darnold's going to be in Minnesota next year. I think if they don't do a deal with him, they'll franchise him. And there's a few different like lines of thinking in that. I think part of it is they think they're going to have Brian Flores potentially back next year as defensive coordinator. They think like, hey, we didn't expect to be actually in a real Super Bowl window right now, but we're actually in a real Super Bowl window right now with this guy and our coordinators and our talent surrounding him. So it's not just about the money. It's not just about his fit with O'Connell. It's the team's going to sit there and go, okay, what are you doing now? We're in a Super Bowl window now. Maybe we win some games in the playoffs. Maybe we get close. You're going to move on to J.J. McCarthy, who's missed effectively his entire rookie season with an injury. And you're going to gamble on that now? Or are you going to go ahead and franchise tag this guy, pay him the $40+ million, and let's roll with this in 2025 and see if we can win a Super Bowl, and then you can make another decision after it at that point. I think Darnold ends up in Minnesota, and then it starts to become other things like Russ in Pittsburgh. This is a critical juncture for Russell Wilson. Like, right, what's happening right now, and what happens the next, through the remainder of the season? Like, Russ could potentially be playing right now for his job in Pittsburgh beyond the season, because the ball security has not been great. And so if Kirk becomes available, maybe Pittsburgh is an option. Maybe they're looking for another bridge opportunity for a different player. I still think Cleveland is a possibility for Kirk Cousins, because he can play for the minimum. He can play for the vet minimum, and they're definitely going to look for a quarterback who can push Deshaun Watson, and they're not going to worry about what Deshaun Watson's feelings are for it. And I think they're nervous about Myles Garrett sitting here going, you're burning my prime right now. You're like, now does Kirk want to go to a place like Cleveland? I don't know. He fits with Stefanski and that scheme. There's going to be some openings there for Kirk. And I mean, Tennessee, honestly, I mean, like, it's, Tennessee's kind of an intriguing spot, I think, right now, because people don't know exactly what's going to happen. And if there's turnover there, if the front office and the coaching staff gets turned over, there's a question. People are like, is that going to happen? That could potentially impact, where some of these other coaches and players end up. I mean, a lot of people are like, well, what if Ben Johnson goes to X spot? Is he talked to the Lions about bringing Hendon Hooker with him? There's a lot of balls in the air right now. This is the fun part of sort of the season, because we're waiting to see, how some of these veterans perform down the stretch, and then how these teams ultimately reflect that in their decisions in March.
So, Charles, to that point, we went through some of these options with you last week in terms of the Titans and potentially a bridge quarterback. And, Cousins, one of those. Obviously, we brought up Aaron Rodgers. I want to ask you about Justin Fields, because Justin Fields obviously did not go to plan in Chicago. He played for Pittsburgh this year, and they were 4-2 when he was in there. I mean, the numbers aren't great. They're not going to blow you away. But what do you make of the idea of Justin Fields, what his future looks like in this league, and what sort of an option he may be for the Titans?
So when Pittsburgh sat him down, I think the pluses were they were happy with his ball security. They're like, hey, he took care of the ball when he was in there. Like, he didn't do any. And, there were times where his numbers could have been a little bit better. There were some drops. There were some mistakes by the offensive line. But I think their biggest problem with him was mechanically, they still felt like they were not getting the football out fast enough with him. Like, it has to be, like, get it out. Don't extend plays because you're not getting it out fast enough. Extend plays because a play's not there to be made. And I think when they continue to look at the film, even when he was having success, they're like, okay, well, there are things being missed. He makes up for it because he can move around. But at some point, you have to cross that threshold of not missing things because you're taking too long to process a situation, or just simply you're just slow in getting the ball out of your hands. And so I think that's sort of a reality of it's going to be wherever he goes. Can a coaching staff coach him out of that? And if I'm sure there's going to be staffs that sit there and go, okay, look, the talent's the talent. He has talent. It's just, can we get him to the point where he's just getting it out fast enough and he's making the right decisions. And I think about, in a way, I think of Darnold. Like, Sam Darnold was a guy who, when he came out of the Jets and then even Carolina, it was like he can't get him off his first read. He has no confidence. He's running around and doing things that don't make sense reflective of the defense that's in front of him. And then things changed. He goes to San Francisco. He starts working with Kyle Shanahan. He settles down. He starts to understand the Shanahan offense. And then he goes and he continues that with Kevin O'Connell. It's what coach, I think, do you pair Fields with? And then how patient are you willing to be? I would suggest Fields probably needs to, wherever he goes next, if I'm his agent, I'm looking for what offense suits him, but where can he go? And in terms of, like, the mind, like, who's going to be able to mold him? Who is he going to be able to settle down under and start to work through some of these things? Because I don't know that you get to, although I look, Darnold, again, look, Darnold, like 27, like, he's pretty late. He's played a lot of years. He's pretty late in the continuum to show that he can improve. So that's probably still there. But I don't know that any team looks at Fields as being a bridge starter next year. I think they look at him as being a backup and with, you know, developmental possibility, maybe the ability to come in and eventually push a starter if you can coach him to that point.
Charles, you said earlier, you mentioned Ben Johnson and, you know, maybe taking Hendon Hooker. I was in Chicago last weekend, talked to a lot of Bears fans. They are, I will say, my sampling is they are all in on Ben Johnson, all convinced they're getting Ben Johnson. No yeah. thanks on Vrabel. That's the yeah. fan perspective. And I, obviously last year, you know, he bailed on Washington and decided, you know, he's got a good gig. I think he's going to be super selective. Is the weirdness of the front office of the Bears enough? Or is that offset the Caleb Williams promise? Like, how does a candidate look at that, those two things that seem to be opposing factors? And do you think that Ben Johnson ends up there?
Well, Ben Johnson fits with Kevin Warren, I can tell you that, because he's not going to come in trying to run the entire organization. He's just not. And Kevin Warren being a guy who, I think, as I said on the show previously, he's definitely been a power consolidator everywhere he's been. He's tried to get as much power as he can and consolidate it. He's done that in Chicago. Vrabel would challenge that. That's what I think is the natural barrier between Vrabel and the Bears is if Kevin Warren is going to be the guy making the call, he's going to look at Vrabel and go, nope, that dude's going to walk in and he's going to want to run more of the organization. Like, he's going to want to be the guy.
That dude's way too big.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, he's going to want to run the organization. Ben Johnson's not that guy. He's the opposite, I would argue. He's not going to try and grab power all over the place. He's more of the, look, man, I just want to come in. I want to coach. I don't want to do a lot of the bells and whistles stuff. I don't want to be on commercials. I don't want to, you know, don't trot me in with, you know, the advertising department so that I can talk to, you know, this account and that account when they come into the building. Just let me do my job and work on the scheme and the quarterback and the development of the offense as much as I can. I don't really want to tinker with the defense either. So let's go find that's perfect for Kevin Warren, in my opinion, from what I know from Kevin Warren's history and the fact that he's taken over the top rung of the personnel side of the Bears. So I think that's a massive barrier for Vrabel. Here's my concern with Ben Johnson and the Bears and Caleb Williams. Ben Johnson with the Lions, when you talk to people in Detroit, one of the reasons why it works so well with Ben Johnson and Jared Goff does not screw around. He's like, I am on time. Like, I'm getting the ball out. Like, I know, boom, 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 this is what I'm doing. These are the decisions I'm making. And then you can see with Goff, when he gets disrupted, they go kind of awry a little bit. But when he's fast and on time, they are really, really, really hard to deal with. He is perfect with Ben Johnson because Ben Johnson's like, here's what we're going to do. Here's the options on the table. Get the ball out. And if you don't see this option or that option, here's exactly – like, it's just very – there's a lot of – I don't want to say rigidity to it, but it's like, here, I am serving you up the menu, and Goff's like, sweet, I'm totally good to read off the menu. Like, I can do this really, really well, and I can do it at an extremely high level. Caleb Williams is not that player, or he has not been that player in college. He has so far not been that player with the Chicago Bears. He's the player with the Bears that he was at USC, and he was at Oklahoma, which is off schedule, getting the ball out way late, right? Not at all snap, boom, decision, get it done, and that's it. He is not that player. So you're going to marry a guy who has traits that don't really lean into what Ben Johnson has done really well with the Detroit Lions and Goff. And by the way, he doesn't have that offensive line, which is a huge difference. He doesn't have the running game, which is a huge difference. Yeah, he's got, you know, some offensive pieces in terms of skill position, the wide receivers. But again, I would argue, other than Keenan Allen, these are wide receivers that are used to on-schedule type pocket stuff, right? You're Rome Odunze, you're like, hey, I play with Michael Penix. You know what to do. This is what the deep ball was. Like, he knew how to get it to me. Threw things on time in college. There was a lot of rhythm to that offense at Washington. Hey, here's DJ Moore. Again, I'm a guy who's, you know, get me the ball in the short area, you know, let me make big plays. But let's go. Keenan Allen's a little different, skill set, probably works well with Caleb. That's why we've seen him have some big games with Caleb. But yeah, I just don't know that. I know Bears are hyped about it, but I think Bears fans are hyped about it, but I think you have to consider, I hope they dive into it on a deeper level. I'm not saying it won't work, but I'm just saying it's not the same. It's not the same quarterback. It's not the same kind of rhythm. And you should think about that when you're trying to pair this quarterback with the OC. Caleb is not like a lot of other quarterbacks. And so far he has done that one thing that personnel departments told you they were worried about, which is, can he play on time? Can he play in structure? Can he play in rhythm? He looks like the USC guy, and Fresno State, the corners and the defenses that you face are not the same as the NFL level. It's different. So welcome to the Bears problem right now.
Yep, no doubt about it. Charles, great stuff, man. Really appreciate you taking time to be with us, and we will talk to you next Thursday.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys. Take care.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, our guest on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll react to what Charles had to say coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.